The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good. Thank you.
We're just talking about some top-level stuff. Of course, we can't ignore the things in America, the storming of Capitol Hill by Trump pro-supporters, rioters. And part of me thinks social media companies now have to take a bigger responsibility here. Because what that does is it allows extremism to congregate and form groups and almost encourage each other and get each other, you know, ahead and start making plans that, normally if it wasn't for these social media groups, it wouldn't happen, you know? And that's largely Trump. He's quite an extremist, isn't it? And now they've sort of banned him. He's been banned off Facebook and Twitter for a while, temporarily. But it just stokes the fire, isn't it? And it's gone mad over there, isn't it? Have you noticed anything in the commodities? Has it affected resources? What's happening? What's your thoughts?
Well, we're very open democracies, and it's very easy to storm government buildings with a handful of people if you want to. Mm. Ironically, gold prices went down, not up, on that. But I think that's really down to the balance of power between the Republicans and the Democrats. And it's not going to be so easy for Joe Biden to get his, shall we say, some of the more left-wing Democrat policies through into legislation. Remember, in the US, the Democrats are really more like our right-wing Tories than anything else, as far as I can see. Both the Democrats and the Republicans have similar policies towards China, so I don't think China is going to be let off the hook. But Biden's going to be an awful lot more diplomatic in the way he deals with the Chinese, which I think will sound a lot better to the rest of the world, but they'll still be pretty tough because they really want the Chinese to play fair with the rest of the world, and they need trade deficits to be rebalanced. Mm-hmm. So I think that those are important things to watch. The great thing is the Chinese are already preparing with what's called dual circulation and local stimulus. So they're actually ramping up consumer demand in China for domestic goods, white goods, all those sorts of things. So we're seeing those numbers rise quite dramatically, and they're still pushing ahead with very big infrastructure programs on a scale that we don't even dream of. So China is still determined to grow very fast. It doesn't seem to be touching the brakes there. I must admit, personally, I'm quite concerned about the new variants, new mutations in the virus, in that our virus is now spreading much faster and is almost out of control. The Japanese have just declared a state of emergency in Tokyo. So I think we're in for a tough few months. But remember, these things tend to burn themselves out anyway. The great thing is that as these viruses go around, as they go around faster, they tend to become less deadly. So let's hope that conventional thinking applies in this case, and it doesn't look like it. Although there's quite a lot of people in hospital at the moment, it still looks like it's no more deadly than it was, which is a relief. But when we look at what's going on in the world, the services PMI data from most countries in the world was looking very good through December. In fact, November was quite good. December was looking good. January is clearly going to start to weaken with increasing lockdowns around the world. Manufacturing is still pretty good because most of that is still going. We see Chinese steel prices rose 5% overnight. That's on the back of higher raw materials costs, and of course, really on the back of much stronger demand from all these stimulus projects. So it says to me that a bit of inflation is coming into the system. Ferrovanadium prices, which drives Bushveld Minerals cash flow, jumped by 5.7% in the week. So that's a big increase, which is good. And there are comments in China and the UK from the various societies of motor manufacturers saying that electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids are likely to exceed, or their sales are likely to exceed sales of diesel vehicles this year. So again, that's that's another big driver for the battery metals.
That's huge, isn't it? Really, that's a huge milestone. I know that diesel, you know, sales gone down anyway. They've been the worst sales for petrol and diesel cars since 1992's slump. But the fact that I didn't even think it was anywhere near EV sales, or even anywhere near diesel sales. But yeah, I saw that yesterday for the month of I can't remember what it was, November, December. But 22,000 EVs left the UK forecourts, whereas 15,000 diesels. So that's amazing. That's a huge milestone there, isn't it? It just shows, I think, adoption is going faster than we realise. And I'm just thinking, you know, when you get towards closer to 2030, who's going to start buying petrol diesels? There'll be less support, less investment, and, you know, it might as well buy something coming in as new rather than going out as old, I think. But, yeah, I think it's already showing early signs of that adoption towards EVs is very fast, isn't it?
Well, everybody's next new car should be an electric vehicle. The question really for consumers is when. Personally, and we talk to a lot of the guys who are providing the raw materials for these battery factories, the guys doing the graphite, lithium, nickel, there's manganese in there as well, cobalt. And the important thing to remember is the quality of the materials that's going into the battery factories is getting better. The technology is moving incrementally, bit by bit. And if you use Tesla as an example, their new battery is going to be many times more, it's going to have many times more capacity, much more capacity in it. So the new batteries are going to be very much better than the ones that are going into cars right now. So personally, I'm going to hang on a bit. Because I, you know,
solid state, John, solid state is where is that? You know,
solid states are way off yet.
I know, but that's what, do you know what? I've, like I said, one of the companies I hold, Ilika, and they're saying that already, you know, early tests are showing the charging times about five times as fast. Range is similarly 5 to 8 times as long. And it'll get there. You know, the thing is, it's with everything, isn't it? I mean, if you look at the investment that went into, and it's a lot of it's about money, isn't it? When you get a huge amount of investment ploughing into an industry, even when you look at the vaccines, normally take 10 years, took 10 months, because, you know, so much money was poured into it. You get that. When the money starts pouring in now, and it will do, into EVs, all the infrastructure, the technology will get better exponentially, you know? And all these worries we had about range anxiety and or charging times will slowly slip away, and it'll become almost normal to get battery charged in 5-10 minutes, whatever. And it, you know, you could a range of several hundred miles easy. So, yeah, it's just about investment, isn't it? You know, innovation is always.
Well, at the moment, the batteries. You don't want to be fast charging batteries too often, and you should be careful about that. But over the next few years, the safety, the reliability, the range of all these batteries is going to increase exponentially, and the cars will therefore be very much better. I mean, the cars themselves, I think, be relatively simple to produce. It's a conventional car, but you take out the guts of the combustion engine and you put in and everything's electric, and the reliability will be very much better, which will be fantastic. But it's all down to the batteries and how well they're made. And there's something like it was nearly 200 new gigafactories being built around the world. Some of them are struggling to get it right, but I think many of them will be very good. I mean, there's one planned in the UK at the moment, up in Sunderland, but I'm sure there will be more. Yeah, 16 in Europe in total.
Yeah, did you see that
from China?
How many in China?
130.
Wow. Did you see that? In fact, the guy, the Society of Motor Manufacturers and Traders, he was saying that, you know, we need 4, probably 5 gigafactories here, not just one. So as you can see, that the investment needs to go into that. So it's going to happen unless we get left behind. And we don't want to do that. I don't believe this government, having, you know, steered through Brexit, you know, the bumpy waters of Brexit, and navigated that, want to sort of, you know, put us on the rocks by not giving us a chance in the EV space, because, you know, we need those. We need that investment. We need to stand on our own 2 feet here. We shouldn't have to rely on Europe to get all batteries from Europe or wherever. So it'd be nice to see investment coming in here. And I think hopefully that'll happen, you know.
Well, you don't necessarily need to be the first one to build a factory. What you need is to...
No, but in 3 years, though. Have you seen that? 3 years.
All the tweaks that are required. The machinery is quite not difficult to buy. We've seen companies with battery manufacturing machinery. If you go to Oxis Energy, they use a certain amount of that. And you can buy it on small scale or large scale. In fact, large scale is just generally replicating the machinery through a bigger factory. And in fact, moving from conventional battery, lithium-ion batteries that we have at the moment, to solid state shouldn't be that difficult from a manufacturing perspective.
In fact, Graham Purdy, the CEO of Ilika, was quoted in the Wall Street Journal as saying exactly that, saying essentially it won't be too disruptive to move from a non-solid state to solid state manufacturing capability. And I thought it was amazing that he was in the Wall Street Journal. They picked up on him. Of all the solid state battery companies in the world, they had they talked about Tesla, QuantumScape, which is a solid state company in America, not going to be producing anything in revenues until 2026. They're valued at $25 billion, was valued at $40 billion, no revenues, and yet Ilika, very similar. In fact, I think they're further advanced. They're going to start producing before them, and they're valued at $250 million, which is ridiculous. So they're like 200 times the valuation of Ilika, and yet Ilika are more advanced. QuantumScape have the advantage of having Bill Gates and Volkswagen as investors, so that's raised their profile a bit. But basically, the Wall Street Journal was saying Tesla will have to adopt solid state if they want to get anywhere in the future. But obviously, Elon Musk is not saying
that. Well, that's the way they want to go. I mean, I think the battery chemistries are going to be driven by a number of key physical factors. The first one is the weight of the battery. And I think the reason why lithium-ion batteries are going to last for quite a long period is the lithium is very light. In fact, the heaviest component in the battery, the heaviest components are the nickel and the graphite. So it's possible the graphite might get replaced by silicon in the anodes, but I don't think you're going to replace the lithium in a hurry. Also, the nickel is unlikely to get replaced because there's no other metal that really is as robust as nickel in a harsh electromechanical environment. So from an investor perspective, nickel and lithium, I think, are good places to be. I think if you're buying into graphite, you want to be in a company that is able to switch from being a graphite producer to maybe something else in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. Okay, let's talk individual company news. John, what's out there resource company-wise? What's happening?
Well, I think with all this inflation that I think is likely to come at us, the gold price is going to carry on to be robust, if not strong.
Yeah, I tell you what, though, it's not really. It's a bit flat. If you look at its crazy nephew, which is now being regarded as digital gold, Bitcoin. It's been a bit flat, hasn't it? Really, isn't? I mean, it's not gone down a lot, but it's going sideways. Have you seen Bitcoin? What's your thoughts on that? It's going nuts, isn't it?
Bitcoin is just a proxy for people who don't want to chase up gold, who don't want to. Who see that there's a lot of money printing going on in the world, which we do see, and want something else to buy. And I think that's why that's moved. I still think gold has had a good run. There's no doubt about that. And that's why I describe gold as robust. I think if you want to invest in gold, you buy the dips. If you want to, I think it's a more solid investment. I think it's likely to continue to do well while there's so much money printing going on in the world.
Yeah. I think trouble is in this day and age, the people are online, and rather than be invested in gold, younger investors are going for Bitcoin, aren't they? Rather than gold, I think that's and also the fact that it's more exciting and it's gone berserk. You'd always find my father called me up, and said, just shall I invest in Bitcoin? My father, he's like 76. And I said, Dad, the fact that you've heard about Bitcoin means no. It may run a bit further up, but let it have a breather and let it come back a bit, because it's gone berserk. And it's like anything, isn't it? Like the stock markets basically attain mainstream media attention when they're either falling by a lot or rising by a lot. Now, if they're falling by a lot, it's probably time to sort of invest a couple of pounds in your funds or whatever. But if it's rising by a lot, it's time to step away or even take a bit of profit if you're already invested. Because when it gets to mainstream media, it's been rising or falling for so long that it's pretty towards the top or bottom end of the range.
Well, as I say, gold is a very good price, and I think it's likely to appreciate a bit more from here. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is, if you're a gold mining company, your margins are very much higher than they were a year ago. And I don't think that's really factored into a lot of the valuations at the moment, particularly at the small cap end of the market. So when we look at news coming out of Alta Strategies this morning, where they report an exceptional indication of or intersection of gold at their Diba project in Mali, I think that's the sort of thing that's going to start to move the market. And I think that's, well, it's great for them. It's a company that hadn't done much for a number of years, and suddenly they came across this discovery, and it just seems to get better and better. So they're looking to identify about 1 million ounces of gold there, and there is an old gold mine very close by, which I think hopefully they'll get access to the processing plant. So I think there's a good future for Altus here.
Yeah. By the way, there's some kind of, you mentioned gigafactories, there's something in the trade deal with the EU that means we have to make batteries in this country from 2027. Otherwise, they get tariff-free access if they get it from the UK or EU. So either we buy it in from Europe or we make it ourselves, or we won't have tariff-free access to the auto parts and batteries and all that stuff. So it's a bit of a window here, but we need to get by before 2027. So we need to ramp up investment, I think. But anyway, go on.
No coincidence that the big planned gigafactory in the UK is at Sunderland. So for the time being, we'll be able to import batteries from Japan and other parts of Asia. Mm-hmm. And yes, there's definitely more that we can. It means our auto industry will be able to get started on building electric vehicles and push on forwards.
Yeah, cool, marvelous. Sorry, Alder Strategy. What's next, John?
Arkel Resources. They're a tiny little company, and not much has happened there in recent years. But they've done some trenching at the Innishowen project in Ireland, and they found some gold bearing veins there. So that's a nice little start. Some quite good grades in those samples, 40 grams a ton from a 10-centimeter quartz vein. Mm-hmm. So it's small, but it's interesting. So it's just a bit of a taster that there might be a bit more to come from that. That's John Teeling is the chairman there. He's had a few companies over the years. It's about time he had something really successful.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Arkel and. What is it? What's the market cap there?
Arkel Resources, £6 million.
Okay, cool.
It's a 2-penny stock.
Marvelous stuff. Lovely. Cool. What's next, John? Anything else?
Ormond Mining, another Irish company. Very interesting situation here. It's been a shell for a while. They sold their tungsten mine to a private equity group. And they've been sitting on €6 million of cash for quite a while now. And they found themselves a project that they want to do. But at the AGM where they were going to vote, where everyone had the chance to vote on that project, it all got held up by the major shareholder, Mr. Anderson. So they're waiting. So they went off and had a chat with Anderson, I believe. There'll be another AGM, but that seems to have been held up. So we're quite excited to see what this deal is, because Jonathan Henry, who runs the company, knows a mining deal or two, mm-hmm. and I've got faith in him. So we're looking forward to see what this deal is, but we just have to wait and see and hope that the next AGM is able to pass that through.
Yeah, cool. OMR, marvelous stuff, and. Let's look at the chart on that. See what the chart is looking like on this. Oh, it's had a bit of a spike up, isn't it, of late? And it's come back down a little bit, but it went from 1.2 to 3.2, and it's come back down now to 2. So settling down a bit. Marvellous stuff. John, anything else?
Rainbow Rare Earths. They've been drilling their Phalaborwa project in South Africa. Mm-hmm. This is a tailings project with very high... relatively high rare earth grades in it, and that project is it's very interesting. They haven't paid much for it, they're paying $750,000. Some of that might be in shares, but the value of the neodymium and praseodymium within those tailings is extraordinary. Mm-hmm. We're looking for confirmation of the grades within the tailings. There was a pilot plant that was run on these tailings for rare earths some years ago. Sasol, which is the big South African oil producer during the apartheid years, very smart chemicals company. They were forced off the project by an anti-competition tribunal some years ago, and the project just sat around for a long time because the tailings have been produced through the production of phosphate over the last 50 years, and so that's so those tailings have built up and up and up, and as they they concentrated the rare earths and the gypsum within that. So there's an opportunity here for Rainbow to do rather well, and they're looking to put in a plant that might produce about 10,000 tons a year of rare earths. And the great thing is that a lot of that is neodymium and praseodymium, which is where all the money is in that business.
Yeah, more stuff. Cool. Anything else, John?
Well, I think there was more than enough news today.
Yeah, it was more than enough. Yeah, it's exactly, and it's free. Let's be honest, people are not paying anything for this. So to get some more, pay John a couple of quid. Lovely, John. Thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak you next week.
Look forward to it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.